good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to another great episode of Information Week Live. This is Information Week Live for the week of June 19th, 2016, and I'm your host, Kurt Franklin. I'm executive editor at Information Week, and this is going to be a little bit of an unusual episode of Information Week Live. Normally, at this point, I'm explaining who my guests are going to be, and it's kind of a short list this week because it is such a busy week around the industry that all of my fellow editors and contributors, well, they're off busy chasing stories for Information Week. So it is just me here talking with you about the top stories in technology for this week. Now, I want to remind everyone that we are live at 3 p.m. Eastern every Friday. And while we're live, we've got this online discussion that takes place at informationweek.com. We'd love to have your voice in that conversation. So if you're here, if you're listening live, please introduce yourself and get that conversation started. If you're listening in a streaming or podcast version, we're glad to have you in the audience. But some Friday, do think about joining us for the conversation. Over the years, we have had some mighty interesting conversations that took place alongside the audio here at Information Week Live. Well, given that today is Friday, June 24th, the big news in technology and pretty much everything else in the world is the vote in the United Kingdom to leave the European Union. It started breaking late last night when it seemed obvious that the vote was going to be to be in favor of what's been called the Brexit. Here at 3.02 p.m. Eastern Time, I'm looking at the U.S. stock market, and the Dow Jones is down a little over 3%, down 5.49 and change at this point. Europe is down different amounts ranging from 3% at the FTSE 100 to a little over 8% on the CAC 40. So basically, since these are forward-looking indicators, what the market is telling us is that kind of everyone expects there to be at least a period of badness that comes about through all of these. I'm in the process of writing up a piece for Information Week on what the likely impact is going to be on the tech industry, especially the enterprise IT and networking fields. And the honest answer is that we're not sure, because as commentators on pretty much every news channel were telling us last night and this morning, we're in uncharted territory. No one's ever left the European Union before. We're not sure exactly what it's going to take to make it happen, and we're not sure what the impact is going to be. There are all kinds of theories, but no one knows. So just to give you a little bit of a preview on the article that's going to be coming up in a little while at Information Week, where do we expect to see impacts? Well, one of them is certainly to be on how complex the security and privacy regulations and laws are, because to this point, England, Great Britain, has shared the same regulations as the rest of Europe, as the European Union. Now they'll be going their own way. So this gives one more set of regulations and laws that companies have to learn and deal with as they're doing business with the UK. Now, I'm calling it the UK. Of course, that's another possible disruption. We've already heard rumblings that Scotland might well want to redo their vote on leaving the UK, or, you know, splitting off, becoming an independent country within the UK, Ireland, and Northern Ireland. The concept of Northern Ireland reunifying with Ireland. Then there are even some rumblings about Wales. This is going to be complicated, and no one knows exactly how complicated it's going to be. Because of that, one of the other points of impact on the tech industry is shakiness in the market. Business leaders tend not to like uncertainty. That's part of why the markets are down. It also is going to probably accelerate a trend that we've been seeing for a while, that IT spending has been slowing overall. People are not confident in the recovery, and so they've been pulling back a bit. This will almost certainly accelerate that. Finally, there's the question of what this means for talent and research in the UK. England is not a critical manufacturing point for electronics, but it is critical for research and development. And so what will this mean for people from outside of Great Britain coming in to do that research, to take part in that development? We don't know. There are all kinds of possibilities that range from things becoming easier because the UK could set up their own laws and regulations to make it easier, all the way up to it becoming much more difficult and many people being kept out of the UK who might otherwise take part in the research. You know, this is one of those things where the wording gets tricky depending upon exactly which side of the issue you're on, but immigration has certainly played a role in this vote, and no one knows exactly what the impact is going to be for future immigration, for future folks coming in and working in Great Britain. Now, one of the longer-term questions is whether this will have any impact on the U.S. election. Because, let's be honest, many of the issues that informed the vote in the U.K. are also issues in the U.S. election. We don't cover politics here at Information Week Live, but once in a while, political issues do have an impact on enterprise IT. This is one where it could. We don't know, but it's going to be fascinating to watch. No question about that. Well, with all of that happening in the last 24 hours, it's reasonable to ask whether there is any other news in the technology industry this week. And sure enough, there has been. There's been a fair amount of news, to be honest. One of the interesting things that happened this week was the release of the top 500 supercomputing list. Now, this is something that is released every 6 months, and it's basically a list of the 500 fastest, most powerful supercomputers on Earth. And this particular version of the list had a couple of things that were special. One of them is that for the first time, the majority, that's not right, not the majority, but the greatest number of systems on the list were not in the United States. China has taken over from the United States as the home to the greatest number of the most powerful supercomputers. Now, it's not a huge margin. It's 167 in China to 165 in the U.S. But the fact that China has moved ahead is meaningful, because one of the places where people have prestige in all of this is how many huge computers live in your country. It's been a point of pride for the U.S. for a long, long time. Now that point of pride belongs to China. The other big point of interest is that the most powerful supercomputer on Earth is in China. Now, this is not the first time that that's happened. That's been true for a little while. What's changed is that this is the first time that the most powerful system in China has been made of entirely Chinese components, because the U.S. government has placed restrictions on the export of certain Intel processors that are frequently used in supercomputers to parts of China, and that had an impact here. The other thing is just how much more powerful this system is than the next system on the list. The top system on the list is now up into the petaflop range. Now, when we talk about flops, that's short for floating point operation. And floating point operations are much more complex for a lot of reasons than fixed point or integer operations. And so what we have is 125,435 teraflops, or roughly 125 and a half petaflops. And that is just an incredible number of operations that can take place simultaneously. Now, the way they do this, of course, is by having a massive number of processing units. And in this case, the system has more than 10.5 million cores. And that's more than three times as many as the second place system, which, oh, by the way, is also in China. So this is one of those things where there's a lot of national prestige rolled up in this, a lot of things that now can be done by the research communities in China that couldn't be done before. So that's a big deal within a narrow margin. So what else is going on? What's a little bit wider? Well, for a lot of people, one of the big pieces of news for the week was that Adobe revved pretty much all of the applications in their Creative Cloud. Some major differences that all were automatically available to everyone who subscribes to the Adobe Creative Cloud. And this is the kind of thing that makes the Creative Cloud, the subscription model, something that the company Adobe will talk about. You know, this is something where you don't have to pay upgrade fees. You don't have to do anything special. It just becomes available. That's a non-trivial advantage for a lot of people, for people who live within the Adobe environment. This is a huge deal, and a lot of people have been talking about this. It seems like they've made some genuine advancements in many of their applications. So a cloud win for a lot of people. Now, cloud was talked about in some other ways. It is amazing for us to look at things like Microsoft talking up containers. Salesforce unified the development process for their mobile apps. This was big because Salesforce really defines software as a service for a lot of people. And when they say that mobile and developing mobile app is the critical part of what they're doing, that's an indicator that, well, mobile really is winning. It's not just cloud first for a lot of companies, but mobile first. And that's truly important. I apologize. Had to cough there. Didn't want to do it in your ear. One of the other things that happened in the whole cloud world was with Google and security. Google made two-step authentication, two-factor authentication, much easier. Now, what does this mean? In practice, it means that you have to have something you know that's your password and something you have, typically your smartphone, where either through an app like the Google Authentication app or through an emailed or messaged one-time token, you have to both give your username and password and then type in some information that's on your smartphone. And what this does is it enhances security because it means that if someone stole your smartphone but they didn't know your password, they couldn't log in. If they got your password but don't have your smartphone, they can't log in. Makes it much more difficult for someone to steal one thing, one piece of information or one physical object and be able to gain access to your information. That really is a substantial improvement in the security of an account at a very small cost in terms of friction. And friction is what we use to refer to the difficulty that's placed in your path as you try to log in. Low friction, high security, a win for pretty much everything. So what else? You know, I'm looking through the list here at InformationWeek.com, and I've got to tell you, if you're listening to this and you're not a regular reader of InformationWeek.com, you really need to make it part of your daily habit. Information Week, we put up dozens of pieces every day, covering a broad swath of the enterprise IT industry. And especially when you add in our sister publications, darkreading.com, which is a security publication, networkcomputing.com, which looks at networking, it really is a great resource for people who are looking for information on the IT industry. One of the things that happened this week is that we started to see some of the fallout from some earlier things that went on. For example, Dell sold its software business, which includes Quest, SonicWall, Statistica, to a private equity firm. And this is all as it gets closer to closing out finally the deal where it acquired EMC. Now, the reported price for the software hand is a little over $2 billion. And that'll go a long way towards paying for EMC. And when I've talked to people who are employed at these software firms, generally, they're optimistic. They don't feel like they were in any way hindered or held back by being part of Dell, but they feel like the transition to the new ownership is going to be smooth and basically is going to allow them to continue doing the good things that they've been doing. So a lot of optimism there. Optimism is a good thing, and that hasn't been quite as common in the IT industry as we would like for it to have been. Now, speaking of optimism, the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, finally this week wrote drone rules for commercial drone use. Now, what's a commercial drone by the legal definition is a flight platform that weighs less than 55 pounds. That's important. That is operated by a pilot who is not on board the aircraft. So someone standing someplace else. The FAA had released rules for hobbyists and consumer users before Christmas. They made sure to get all of those out in time for the Christmas sales rush. But everyone had been waiting to see just how many rules the good folks at the FAA would impose upon the commercial use of drones. Now, the good news is that they didn't make it unreasonable. You do have to have a license by the FAA, but you don't have to be the pilot of a standard aircraft in order to be the pilot of a drone. So you don't have to actually be able to get into a fixed-wing aircraft or a helicopter and fly it around before they'll let you fly a drone. Basically, you have to do the ground school part that shows that you understand all of the rules and laws and regulations and best practices that define aviation. You have to pass that test, and you have to pass a test that says that you know the rules that apply specifically to drones. Now, after that, when you're operating a drone, you have to make sure that you can see it, which means that it has to be between dusk or between dawn and dusk during daylight hours. You have to make sure you can see it in that it stays within the line of sight. In other words, you have to be able to put eyes on it. And you have to keep it under 400 feet, either above above the ground or above a building if you're inspecting a building. And that's important for some of the uses that people have talked about, which include structure inspection and doing some maintenance. The idea is that maybe you could spray anti-rust stuff onto a building or a bridge or some other structure from a drone rather than having to put a human being in a precarious situation. You can carry payloads as long as they are firmly affixed and aren't going to affect the flight path by wobbling around. You know, in general, this allows for a lot of things. Now, what does it forbid? Forbids operating at night. It forbids operating with a heads-up display if the aircraft is out of your non-aided sight. So this will make things like drone delivery much more complicated. You can't operate the drone inside a building. You can't operate the drone from a moving vehicle unless you're way out in the country, not near anything else. And basically, they threw in language that says you can't do anything stupid. So if we haven't thought of it specifically, just don't be stupid. Don't, for example, operate it over the head of people who aren't part of the operation. What does that mean? It means that if you're on a movie set where everyone is there to make the movie, you can shoot using a drone without any problem. Flying a drone over a crowded city street where most of the people there have no idea what's going on, you cannot do. And I think that we were all given a reminder about how important that rule is. Earlier this year in the winter, when at one of the downhill skiing competitions in Europe, there was a company that was covering the competition using a drone as one of their camera platforms. And they had a catastrophic failure of the drone, and it just dropped like a rock from the sky, barely missing someone who was racing downhill. So you got to be careful about such things. Now, if you want to try something, you can always apply for a waiver to the rules. And the FAA is putting the process for applying for a waiver online. So the FAA is pretty clear that they want experimentation to continue, but they want it to be safe experimentation. And I think, you know, personally, that seems quite reasonable. It's one thing to experiment. It's something else to hurt people, and we don't want people getting hurt. There's a lot more information this week. Microsoft was busy both with Azure and with Flow and with SharePoint, doing a lot of releases that make their products more accessible to people both in the cloud and on mobile devices. This is one of those things where Microsoft is moving forward very rapidly, and we don't get any indication that they're going to slow down or pull back. This is obviously the direction for their future. This is obviously something that they're going to be doing for a long, long time. So here we come to the end of this episode of Information Week Live. And what's the big takeaway? Big takeaway is that we have a huge area of uncertainty, the spot that has been known as the United Kingdom, Great Britain. You know, Great Britain is charting its own path, for better or for worse, possibly both. It's going to be all new territory for the next couple of years. It'll be interesting to watch. I doubt this is the last time you'll hear me talk about it here on Information Week Live. Microsoft moving hard and fast to continue to expand into the cloud and onto mobile devices. FCC was active in 5G. FAA was active in drones. Supercomputers get faster, especially in China. It's been a heck of a week. Well, I hope that you will follow what goes on in IT at Information Week. As for me, I mentioned earlier that I'm writing a piece on what the impact of Brexit is likely to be on the tech industry. That'll be up later tonight or this weekend. One of the things I don't control is when things go up. Pardon me just a moment. The other thing is that you can follow me at KG4GWA on Twitter. I'm also on Periscope, that same handle. Feel free to follow me over on Instagram. Kurt Franklin is where I am there. I'm also Curtis Franklin at LinkedIn, on Facebook. Feel free to follow me both those places. What I'm trying to say is that I, like all of the rest of the Information Week editors, try to get information to you the way that it's most comfortable for you. Let us know how we're doing. Drop us a note by any of those means. And if you want to send us an email, by and large, our email address is firstname.lastname@ubm.com. We always love to hear from our readers. Well, thank you for being with us, whether live or in a streaming or podcast version of Information Week Live. We'll be back here next Friday. Realize that it's the Friday before a holiday weekend here in the U.S., but we'll be here. And hope that you'll be here, too. We'd love to catch up with you and have you catch up with the big news in IT for next week. Well, for everyone at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, we'll see you next week.